Pilot number 40, we have Steve Sepelis. Steve, thanks for joining us, man. You're an incredible dude. You've done a lot. You've been around for quite a while, and a lot to do with house music. I mean, you've seen it evolve. You've had you've worked at multiple record stores. You've owned record stores. You've had businesses in revolving around DJing and house music and techno and stuff like that. But you've been around for a while. You've seen the birth, and you've seen it evolve.
Yeah, and thanks for having me, by the way. It's a great opportunity to sit and talk with you guys and talk about all this.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been a long time. And it's like I was telling you, I was trying to research for this, and I was just like, wow, it's a lot of music over the years.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Like, what, Steve, what was like the first song, like either house song that like was like what the fuck is this? Like, this is like, this is like awesome. Like, do you remember like the song that either... that friend showed you, or that you were at a club and you're like, they put it on the needle down.
Yeah. Shit. I can't imagine Foghat made it all. There had to have been something. Foghat and Boston are not like, they're not dance songs, but like what,
you know what? It's the just evolution a, with process. Me. It's just been you? it's been a journey.
What was that?
Because here's the thing. I don't know what that song would be really, but I mean, there's songs over periods of years. You mentioned earlier, Pump Up the Volume. That was from that time period, but I'm just a music fanatic. I mean, I love all kinds of music. I mean, if you'd see my record collection, it's massive. It takes up a whole storage thing. I pay a ridiculous price for it every month.
How do you have your records stored?
In boxes right now, but they literally in my apartments I've lived in, they take up, there's a whole room. It's just all my CDs.
How do you organize it? Like,
it's filed just alphabetically by artists, but I have probably, God, I don't even know, thousands and thousands of vinyl. I have thousands and thousands of CDs. I mean, from all different eras. I mean, I'm talking even vintage jazz. I have box sets of Frank Sinatra. I have all kinds of stuff. And then you know, rock stuff, old rock stuff. And I just, you know, I mean, from the time I was a little boy, I used to sit and listen to, I'd mow lawns and go buy 45s with my allowance, you know, and sit in my room and shut the door and just listen to all this music, you know.
Do you remember your first 45?
Wow. I don't actually remember.
Do you have any of your old record collection as a kid? Do you still have it now? Any of the old ones?
Some of the albums, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, yeah. I was a big fan of like Leonard Skinner. I was like,
yes.
Yeah.
I was a big fan.
You too?
For rock, yeah. But I was also, I'll tell you, I was a big fan of, again, going through eras, but I liked that, you know, Sly and the Family Stone, the Spinners, that kind of stuff from yeah. that era.
Yeah. Well-rounded.
But yeah, I can't remember some of the other rock bands I used to like, Boston and Baker Street. Remember that?
Yeah.
I used to love all that stuff.
Yeah. Hey, Fonz, what is your earliest? What do you remember earliest about like house music?
Going to Arena. My first nightclub and listening to house was going to Arena in what was it, Hollywood?
It was on Santa Monica.
So like just rocking out and just being blown away because it was all ages, and I was like, they're letting me in the club, this is awesome. I was just a little kid and shit, probably in junior high, and then just getting let in and partying like the whole night and just dancing and just being, I felt like an adult, you know, they let you into the club. It's like, it wasn't a quinceañera. it wasn't a wedding.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, this is awesome. And it just the music was pretty freaking cool. The song
The experience. That's kind of...
Yeah, the experience was awesome. Going to clubs was awesome, you know. Yeah. And nobody judged you about like dancing because, you know, I have two left feet. So that was pretty cool, you know. Just everybody doing their own thing is great.
Yeah. Dude, I remember being like, young, like super young, like third or fourth. I have a brother who's like 8 years older, and he would go to Florentine Gardens. So this is like mid 80s when I was a kid. My brother was in high school.
They're a popular place.
And he would go, yeah, to Florentine Gardens back in the day. But he, you know, and he was 18. And I guess there's a difference between the 18 and the 21 over clubs then. I'm sure there is now with the liquor licensing and stuff like that. But I remember him going all the time, and, you know, and then, or like, I would go through his like tape deck, his cassette tape and stuff like that. And that's how I remember like house music and things like that. But
I think me and you like the house music and everything, because all the girls like house music. Because before that, we liked we still do like the metal and everything. And,
oh yeah.
And the dirty stuff. But every time we would go to gigs, there was no girls
there.
There's
no girls there. Just a bunch of fat dudes mosh pitting.
Yeah, so we're like,
fun, but.
So then the girls started listening to the house music, and then we're getting into these clubs. So we're like, damn.
There's girls here.
So your two left feet get to work, you know, and you just try to start dancing.
That's true. I don't care how much, you know.
I was up in the booth making the girls dance so that you guys could.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So you're well-rounded. Obviously, you like a bunch of music. How do you get, because there's so much to talk about, and there's so much in between. I mean, for crying out loud, we're going to talk about Groove Radio. Remember that back in the day?
I love it. Thank you so much.
How do you connect the dots? How does that evolve from you're sitting in Pennsylvania with your headsets on, and you're listening to
Top 40, yeah, waiting every week for it to come on.
What's that process like? Is it high school? Is it college? What brings you out to Southern California? What's that story?
I just used to sit and listen to it and dream about someday not being there and being out here, you know, where there was a scene. And I remember the first time I walked into a club and I just watched, the DJ, I was right away fascinated with the DJ. The fact that there was this crowd in there and people were all having such a good time, and he was in control of it all. But he was, and then I think it was the desire to turn people on to music, you know, to get to know music and turn people on to it. And I did that over the years in many ways: DJing, playing it, sales in the store, programming radio. So it was kind of always turning people on to music and seeing. The biggest thrill is when you turn someone on and it, like if you're DJing and you put on a song and the floor just fills up and everybody's screaming and having a great time. And I mean, you're creating that, you know, and then in the same thing in the store, when you customer leaves and they bought this song and you see them a couple weeks later and they're like, oh man, that song you sold me, I just can't stop listening to it. And it makes you feel good. I mean, because you turn people on to something that makes them feel good. So.
Did DJing bring you to California?
Yeah, no. I just got tired of being in Hicksville and decided I wanted to go to a city. A friend of mine lived in San Francisco. I actually moved from Pennsylvania to San Francisco, and I lived there for 4 years. And I landed in the middle of, that was disco, like, heyday. So I landed in the middle of San Francisco.
What years?
Country Boy, 1979. And in the middle of San Francisco, it was, like, insane. So I start going to all these clubs and hearing all these DJs and seeing these massive crowds and just getting into the music. Then I got a job in a record store there, Gramophone, you mentioned, and before we were talking, and then I started getting my eyes open to the music industry, because it was a very busy store. All these record company reps were coming in there all the time, bringing us like the latest stuff. It wasn't even released yet for sale. And I thought, oh, how cool. I have this record and it's not even out yet. And just the thrill of it all. I would just get so excited about it all, the music. And
how does running a record store or working at a record store work? For like, you got to have all kinds of music, and you said you like it all, but there's stuff that you probably don't like.
Oh yeah, there was stuff.
And you're like, why are you giving me 1,000? We're not going to sell like one, you know, like how does that work?
Well, if they're giving it to you, that's one thing. If you have to spend your money on it, that's another thing. It's like, wait a minute.
How does that normally work?
I'm going to buy
like,
three of these.
As a record store, like, do they give it to you and then whatever you sell?
They give you promos they bring you promos and they give you a pile and they'll go, here, this is so-and-so, and they give you a little spiel on each one, and you listen to them, then you decide what you're going to buy as far as what you're going to stock in your store. So So it kind of goes back to you have to research a little bit and know who people are, and follow trends. You have to, and then it's your ear. Some of it's your ear, you know, the stuff that you choose to bring in. Like at my record store here in Long Beach, I had this store called Record Reaction that was there for many years, and I would get on Sunday night pages and pages of just faxes, of faxes. Remember those things?
Yeah.
And faxes, and I would have to go through pages and pages and just decide what I'm going to order, and I went because this is from New York. My distributors were all in New York, and I'd fax them all back and give them my orders. But, you know. It was just getting to know DJs and producers and labels, what kind of sound labels put out and all that. But that was later. But
you mentioned Record Reaction. And then you were in San Francisco. Who started
house music? I kinda jumped ahead, didn't I?
That's okay. Who started house music in your opinion? What DJ was a big game changer?
Probably Frankie Knuckles was known as the godfather of house. He was amazing, and sadly he passed away last year, but he was known. There was probably Eric Murillo, Ralphie Rosario, Danny Tenaglia, some of those. There's so many, you know. Yeah. but yeah. And when house music started, it's interesting. People would come in the store, and they didn't even call it house music. It didn't even have that name yet. They would come in, they go, "Where's your warehouse music?" I go, "What? What is warehouse music?" And basically, it had that name because they would find these warehouses that it may be a business, and they would clear it out at night, bring in a DJ, and they would play this music, this infectious rhythm that people were getting into, and then got the name house music. But that's how it started, and it started in Chicago, and then it just spread.
I'm a little unfamiliar. So what era is this? What time of the
was that?
This
was like in the 80s.
Late 80s.
Yeah, like okay. Late 80s. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, mid 80s. There's Frankie Knuckles has a song with Jamie Prince called Your Love. It's probably one of like the first deep house songs that became super popular.
Okay.
And that everybody listened to. It's probably, and the only reason is because like he was passing out the tapes. Like he was DIY. He was just passing out tapes to everybody. He went to like all the record labels, and everybody turned him down, and it became super, super popular. Everybody asked for it. It's pretty cool.
Sounds like punk rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That happened a lot with record companies. That's kind of the thing that happens. They turn down a lot, and then they see what happens with it, and then they jump on it.
Right, yeah.
He also did one of his famous songs, which was like a number one charting Billboard song, was called The Whistle Song. It was huge. All I mean, right. You would know it instantly if you put it on.
Oh, what's here? Yeah. I think that's my biggest, like, do you think that's kind of common too? I feel like that's common with like house songs where you're like, that's this name of this song. And you're like, I don't know. And then you're like, you would know it and you hear it and then you play it. And you're like, oh yeah, it's that one.
That's pretty common with people. I think if you're not in the industry or you're not a lot of people don't know. So, I mean, people come in my store and go, oh, I want that song that goes, you know, it has that beat. And
it's
goes,
like, Al Bundy.
It's like him. It's like, you know, it has that, you know, it has that real up-tempo beat. And it's just, you know,
like,
and then that girl
the whole
sings.
Catalog of house.
It's like, okay,
beat.
Well, it's over there on that wall somewhere. You
Steve,
know?
Before you got to LA, you, and before Record Reaction, there was, you mentioned Gramophone and then Aloha Records.
Yeah.
Did you just work there too? Or?
Yeah, I left Gramophone and, Gramophone was an interesting story. Let me just say this first, in the sense that it had dance music, and we had artists coming there every Saturday. Like there was a schedule on the wall who was going to be there, and all the big artists. I mean, they had Barbara Streisand there. They had just anybody that was anybody. They had the Village People there. They had every Saturday that we had an in store, and that was something that was big back then. You know, it's just, and it continued up through the years with stores. And I did that with my store even here in Long Beach. But when you would have artists come to the stores, you know, and do signings, That was big that used to happen in record stores. But yeah, Gramophone was very busy in that sense. It also sold tickets to all the cabarets in San Francisco. It also, half of it was music, half of it was magazines. They would import magazines from all over the world and people would come in. So it was a really busy place. Aloha Records was a store that opened that was just all dance music. And all the DJs started going there and everything.
Was that one of the first niche stores?
Yeah, it was just one of the first niche where it was just all dance music.
Wow.
And just dance music from all over the world. And every DJ in the city came there and bought music. And I went over there and became the manager. They hired me to be the manager there. And I bought a lot of the music and managed the store for them. They had one location, and it was a tiny little store upstairs over a card shop in San Francisco. I mean, it was probably no bigger than this room, which people can't see, I just realized. But
it's huge, by the way. 10,000 square feet.
That's it was a very studio. Small. It was very small, and it was just, but it was very popular.
So because you were the manager, you never had to like dig in the crates, as they say, right? Because you already knew what they were going to buy, what you were going to buy. Or were you ever surprised? Like, would you ever go to another record store and say, oh, I don't have that, and you pick it up?
Oh, yeah, I would snoop. Yeah, I would go around, yeah. But just mostly, no, it just all came in. It just came in there through distributors and through the record companies. And then DJs would come in, or I would go hear them. And I'd go, hey, dude, what was that song you just played? You know, I need to get that for the store, or I want to get it for myself.
What brought you to L.A.?
Just wanting to... You know, I mean, it's just wanting to be in the city, you know, and being down here. Oh, actually, what brought me to L.A.
Yeah, because you were in San Francisco.
I was in San Francisco, but I got offered a job here and working for JDC Records. And they were a distributor, a label, and they were the distributor that sold music to the stores. And so that was the next level up, you know, in the chain of how music, you know, comes from the labels, then it goes to the distributors, then it goes to the stores. But so they brought me down here and I moved down here. They offered me the job. I wanted to do it. And I started selling music to stores all across the country. There were dance music stores all over the United States. And I used to call them up. That was before, we didn't even have fax machines then. I had one of the first phones that, you know, they had the antenna come out of the top of it.
Yeah, the Zach Morris.
I used to walk around a warehouse and just read off all these titles and tell these stores, oh, you should have this, you need this, you need this, you need this. And they would buy from me, you know, and I would rack up big, big orders and ship them all over the country. I mean, there were famous stores. One of them in New York, Vinyl Mania, was famous. And, we would ship records to them and just all over the United States we'd send records to.
Wow.
So I did that. And then I started to get into studio work there because they licensed a couple records and they didn't become huge, but I got into studio work a little bit, but they were popular in some cities. There's a song on, you can pull it up on there. It was called Flashlight on a Disco Night. It was by Ruffo. And I went in and had my first experience with doing some studio work with that. And then later on, I did some other studio work. So I started to get into studio work a little bit, remixing. And that was fascinating. So I did that. And then...
So what takes you over the hump? What takes you to where you want to be an owner of your own record store?
Because I missed being in a store. The record store, you know, and it's interesting. I was talking to somebody else about this recently. Somebody brought up on Facebook, remember the days of record stores and how you would kind of became a ritual. You know, on Saturdays, you would go to record stores, you meet your friends and you go hang out in record stores. I don't know if you guys ever did that or experienced that, but it was seriously kind of a ritual. I mean, people would go hang out in record stores But the record store is an attraction. You get the artists, you get the DJs, you get the just average person, you know, people that like music, and they come in there, and it's a great source of meeting people, great source of information. You get all the music, you get all, it's like a center of it all. So, and that's what attracts me to record stores, and it did. And then when I was working at JDC, there was a popular one in Hollywood, and called Prime Cuts, and there weren't really that many other ones around. And I saw a void. There was no one over here in Long Beach and South servicing that kind of music. So I said, I decided I wanted to open my own record store here in Long Beach and just have it specialize in dance music and imports. And so I started it here.
Because you've seen it work. You had already seen it work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and believe me, I pulled that thing together by the seat of my pants. I had no funding. I mean, I bought fixtures from a store that was going out of business, and I took them all apart, repainted them, and I was in there all night long, and the fixtures. So all that was, from scratch, you know, and couldn't get any big bank loans or anything. So I used my connections in the industry from record companies and from distributors that I knew that would actually give me some product on time. And so I just started from there. And then I would buy, sell, and trade records with people, and DJs would come in for their collections. And I had a massive collection. At that time, I always kept two of everything. Had to have a spare because, you know, you're spinning in a club every night and they wear out. So you gotta have a backup. So,
what was your DJ name?
Just DJ Steve. DJ Steve? Yeah. I got a kind of a famous name. I was at Gru Radio. Everyone started calling me Mr. Steve because nobody could pronounce my last name. So,
where does that come from?
A lot of people call me Mr. Steve. So, if you want to call me that, you can.
You got it, Mr. Steve. How long did you have Record Reaction?
16 years.
16 wow. years. That's. You know, when you just think of, like, if you've been gone for 10 years, like, if you've been in jail for 10 years and you come out, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and I was like, his friend was actually in jail, and he was in jail for, I think, 11 years or something like that. And I was like, dude, think about 11 years ago. Not even the Razor phone was out 11 years ago. Like, remember the old Razor phone? Like, yeah. Like, so when you think of how long you had Record Reaction, the evolution. We talked about this earlier about how, like, raves.
Oh, yeah.
You own Record Reaction when raves started coming onto the scene.
Right? And it was a great time period because, yeah, it opened in 85. And there's always been this war between the underground versus commercial, you know?
Okay.
And I think the reason it started is because people wanted to get away from the commercial aspect of stuff. They wanted to go for a place and hear music that they didn't have to hear the commercial artist mixed in. They wanted to hear just that music. Gotcha. And they wanted to escape into their world and that music and not have to deal with the commercial bullshit, you know? So I think that's why it started and that's how it started. And I think, and then DJs start playing it. But they would have these secret locations and there would be a party. They'd bring you a flyer in saying there's a party this weekend. They give it a name, but they wouldn't tell you where it's at. And then they would pick a map point where you would have to go to and a lot of times they were stores or whatever. And you would go in and you would pay your admission fee. And then you'd get a map to where the party was. That's how secret it was.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Wait, and then like map, like it was like a map. Did you have to have like 100 napkins and go make a left over here on 7th Street?
And then a Thomas guide right next to it?
Yeah,
or
like, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Thomas guide.
There's no Google back then. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's
look
how.
Look it up, kids. Thomas guide.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
exactly.
What they did. Yeah.
And not Tom.
Thomas guide, the Thomas Brothers guide to be exact.
I remember one time, yeah, and they would be late at night. I remember one time they asked my store a couple of times to be map points. And, you know, I said, sure. And, you know, here we are at midnight, like 1 o'clock in the morning, the store's open. And one time the police came in, they were like, what are you guys doing in here? It's like, having a midnight sale.
Yeah. You know, Diamond Girl came out 40 minutes ago.
And, you know, in the meantime, I was like, you know,
yeah,
but, it was, yeah. So they would do that and we would stay open till 1, 2 in the morning and just let people come by. People would walk in the store, walk to the back where we'd have it set up. They'd pay their fee, get the map and leave, you know, but I did all these things to promote the store and like, you know, help. I was always trying to promote the store and put it on the map. That's how I got involved in radio and that's how why I did this, the record pool, because I'm pointing to this. No, I started a record pool, I should say. And because they all work together.
Yeah. Yeah. How, like Record Reaction, it's a staple. It's no longer, but it definitely, you know, when people talk about raves and house music, especially down in this part of town, they're going to bring up, Record Reaction. How proud are you of the things that you accomplished while owning
Record Reaction? Oh, very proud. Very proud. I mean, it was a lot of hard work, but it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I mean, I have to mention my partner at that time was Jimmy Ryan, and he helped. He was quite the visionary, and he was part of that, you know, and helping. I mean, at first I started this by myself, and then, you know, I needed help, and he came in, and he helped. He was a great visionary with the technical side of it, and he would put things on paper, and he was good with computers, and he also helped with the financing of it and stuff like that. So he was a very important part of it as well. So, and we worked together for years and had this store, but we promoted the hell out of it. We were just always, I mean, we'd be sitting up at 3 a.m. folding flyers, because you didn't have any way, you didn't have the internet then to advertise. You didn't have any way to
do it. Licking stamps or what?
Yeah, I mean, we were licking stamps on and sticking, get a pile of flyers, and then we would fold, we'd do mailings, bulk mailings, because we kept a mailing list.
Yeah.
And then we would go to clubs and hand out flyers and go just places that would, you know, have people that would be interested in that kind of music.
What's a rave like in the mid 80s?
Oh, insane.
What is that? What was that like? Where do you go? Like, what is warehouse?
Well, you get a ticket from his record store.
Well, once you found the... Yeah.
Once we got to your place and got the map.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, once you got there, it was just, you know, and that's the thing. It wasn't high tech. It was just very simple. It was the DJ, maybe a fog machine, and a couple lights, and that was it. You know, it was very simple. But it was the music. It was the passion that people had for this music. You know, and this scene, this part of just create going into this place and just losing themselves and letting, just having a good time dancing and feeling this music. I mean, it would just go right through you. I mean, the bass and the rhythms and the just, it would just go right through you. It was just, and that's people just, it caught on, and people, it went crazy.
How about the first song, like the first year that you owned Record Reaction? What was like the first hit that you remember? Like, damn, I should have ordered more.
Diamond Girl.
No, not Diamond Girl. No, Freestyle was big. Yeah, Power 106 was big then. Dude, like I said, like, Company B, Fascinated. That was a big song.
Oh, yeah, Company B, Fascinated.
I sent that to Power 106. I was like, I hit them over the head. I said, you know what? This song just came in, and you got to play it. Because, see, that's when I started connecting with radio stations. I was sending them music. And why did I send them music? Because if they would play it, then I'm going to sell shitloads of it.
Ah, that's right. Well, you did mention Debbie Deb.
Company Music, Company Be Fascinated, Debbie Deb, Searching, When I Hear Music.
Mm-hmm. How big was that song back in the day? Huge. I feel it's still big now, right, Vaughn?
Huge.
Hell yeah.
Huge, yeah. It was huge. That style, that freestyle music was huge back
then.
It's
When I Hear Music. When I Hear Music.
When I Hear Music, yeah. With little bells going off in it.
It's like, it always reminds me of Legend of Zelda, level three. Did it make radio at the time?
Oh, see, yeah, it was played a lot.
Was it More Power or more Kiss FM?
It was Power 106.
Was
Power 106 owned Freestyle. They kind of like owned, I think, different radio stations. I don't want to sneeze, but no, I think, like, there were different radio stations, and they all had different sounds, and they were kind of known for certain things. It's like Power 106 was known for the freestyle. At the same time, K-Rock was becoming really powerful with, you know, popular, I should say, with, you know, like stuff like New Order and
Joy Division. Joy Division was New Order, or the other way around.
Yeah, and Pet Shop Boys and all that stuff. Depeche Mode came on the scene then. And
Don't Turn Around.
Yeah, Dead or Alive. Remember that?
And all
that
stuff. Dead or Alive, yeah.
All that stuff was then. So K-Rock was doing that. Power 106 was doing the freestyle stuff. It was all popular. And what people came to the store for were to get the remixes of all that stuff.
Gotcha. Who's making the remixes?
Back then, there's always been DJs remixing. And probably if you're going to go to break, that's a good place to stop, would be that the fact that I saw then a change in DJing. in the sense that DJs were going to become artists in their own right. And that's a thought to maybe elaborate on when we come back.
Cool. All right. That's a good sign off.
It feels good, 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 good. Feels good. Radio.
Now, is this dreaming or just remembering?
Right on! Right on!
The new 103.1.
Time to dance.
What are you listening to?
Groove Radio.
Like, let's go back into disco music. I never wore a white suit. I never did that little thing that people do with their, you know, I mean, it was just that commercial Saturday Night Fever commercialized
Travolta,
disco
baby.
Music that just beyond, and it made some people really sick what it did to it. But so then after that, but what you heard in clubs back then, when you go to serious dance clubs, you would hear disco music that the general public didn't know. I mean, I could give you a whole list of disco songs, but the same thing with then when it became house music, in every genre that it is turned into, there's an underground, there's a commercial level of it. And it seems like when it gets too big and too commercial, then people say, oh, it dies. Well, it doesn't die. It just goes back underground. But and then it survives, it lives in the clubs, and then it starts something, some group, some artist, some sound emerges, and then it explodes again.
Then you get Groove Radio.
Groove Radio, 103.1.
So you,
after Mars FM, after, yes, it had several formats on
there. Dude,
that.
I
who is Ken Roberts, the original owner of K-Rock.
Used to own K-Rock and then sold K-Rock.
Sold K-Rock to Infinity.
Infinity.
And he bought 103.1.
And Infinity owns a bunch of stations, right?
Yes, they're a conglomerate.
Yeah, and so then he said, maybe I can strike gold again and then make another station and make Mars, which was the original.
Part of the problem he had.
What was his motivation for Mars? What did he want out of that station?
I don't know, because I wasn't involved with him on that level at the time. I knew the program director there, Freddie Snakeskin, and I would send music to him, and he played. I mean, that's when the techno thing exploded, and so I think Freddie had it was kind of like an updated. He was started off with it being alternative, probably of that time. There was a lot of great alternative music that wasn't being played on K-Rock, and he played it on Mars, and there was some great, great bands and great music, and then the techno thing just exploded and it got so big, and he became the outlet for that, but there was a big backlash with that also. I remember when they pulled all the techno off the air because it just wasn't in the radio world. It wasn't working. It was just that. Here's the thing about, okay, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about radio, people ask me, you know, what did you, you know, when I worked at Groove Radio, what I learned about radio, and this is thing. It is a business. And it's not just about the music. And unfortunately, it's not. It's a business, and it has to make money, and it has to get ratings. It's just like television. Radio and television are very similar in that way.
Someone has to pay the bills.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's great. I mean, Kim Roberts once told me, you can play Lawrence Welk music all day. I don't care what you play, as long as it gets me ratings and revenue. And that's what radio is. And it's very researched, and there's a whole science to radio that I learned that I didn't know before I was in it. So,
yeah.
But I kind of got off the track there.
Is with commercial radio, is advertisement what you're looking to accomplish with radio? Or maybe that's just an ignorant.
Well, yeah, you have to get perception. There's two things there. You have to get ratings and you have to get revenue. And it's kind of like the chicken and the egg syndrome. You got to get the ratings to get the revenue. If you don't get the revenue, then you're not going to be able to stay on the air and get the ratings. So, they go hand in hand, definitely. And so, yeah, so back to the music, and then there was Mars FM, and then after that went off. That had a big impact on people in LA, and the rave scene, that's when the rave scene started. And so they went hand in hand. I mean, Mars became kind of the rave station, the people that were part of that scene, because of all the techno music they played.
Mars was so short-lived. Then it became Groove Radio, same radio
station. No, it didn't become that right afterwards. I think it became a jazz station.
But it was the same freak. It was 103.1.
Yeah, it was the same. It was the same frequency, 103.1, and it was owned by the same person, Ken Roberts. But he changed the format several times. Part of the problem that he had with that station, I will tell you this, is the signal. It had a very weak signal. It was a simulcast. They had a signal in Santa Monica and a signal in Newport Beach. And it hit the beach cities, it hit Hollywood, but it did not reach to the valley. And some of the formats, like that was part of the problem even that Groove Radio had, you needed the valley. We had a lot of listeners out there. The Latin market was huge for us, and that's where a lot of them live. And we needed that audience, and we couldn't reach them. People used to call up and go, do something with your signal. Please do something with your signal. You know, on the comment line.
I do remember that.
They'd be on their roof with, you know, antennas and aluminum foil trying to get.
You would have to do that back in the day.
And they just couldn't get it. You know, they could get it in their cars, and they could get it. And like I said, where it was clear, it was popular. And then that happened with Mars. But Groove had that problem also, you know,
How do you go from Record Reaction to Groove?
I started producing shows out of my store. There were shows that I did for Mars, it was called the Mars Top 30 Countdown. And I got the DJs, different club DJs to mix that. And, it was hosted by the Swedish Eagle, and it ran for 3 hours every Saturday, and I produced that. I did all the mixing, was done in my store, and I put all the lists together. I did got the put all the music together, and basically just turned them in to the station to be aired, and it was on. So, and the reason, like I said, to back up, what started me working with radio stations was just to promote my store, because the music that I was giving them, if they played it, people would have to come to my store to buy it. That was my thought, you know, because it wasn't sold in Tower Records or some of the chains. They would have to go to a dance music store to get it. So that was my reasoning in giving it to them.
So what happens when you Record Reaction closes or you make the jump to Groove? What happens there?
We started doing a show. Groove Radio International, and it was syndicated in actually 7 markets across the country. It was in the biggest market was New York. And again, the show would air in New York, and the phones at the store would ring off the hook the next day. And I was shipping, my mail order was huge. I was shipping music. And it was kind of ironic because my distributors were in New York, right? So they're sending me the music from New York to the store, and then the show airs in New York. and then I'm shipping the music back to people in New York and that were listening to the show. And because, yeah, I mean, we did tons of mail orders. I became a UPS shipper. I was shipping out piles of packages every day.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah. So that's how I got, you know, attached to the radio stations. And then it just became more and more working, doing, you know, with that, doing Groove Radio, producing Groove Radio International. And then when Ken Roberts decided to give the station to Groove Radio, to make it a 24/7 format, we went up there and went on the air with that format of Groove Radio International. And it was very popular. But we had the same problem. Unfortunately, it had a strong core audience. People loved it. It became their lifestyle, but it wasn't making money and it wasn't getting ratings. Again, I want to draw attention to part of that, I think, was the signal. But yeah. I think that, you know, I learned a lot when I got up there. I learned all about radio because you have to work with consultants and these people that, you know, everything's researched. Okay. And then everything, you have a target demo audience, you know, ours was women 18 to 34. I mean, and everything is geared around that. And you have to be able, the sales department has to be able to sell your format, and the advertisers are going to come from that audience. You know, it's like, if it's women, then you're going to get advertisers for women mostly a lot. And, you know, K-Rock had more of a male audience. You know, it's just like on TV, you know, TV does the same thing. When you're watching a football game, notice the commercials.
Yeah.
You know, when you're watching
erectile dysfunction.
Like Spike TV is all, it's just male.
Is, yeah. phone women.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's very researched, and it's very, there's a formula there that I didn't know before I got into radio. And then once I, so the thing of it is, halfway through Groove Radio, we were going to do a more commercial, the owner wanted a commercial version. There was a station in New York called WKTU, and they were hugely successful. They were a commercial dance station. He wanted us to do an LA version of that. And we kind of didn't. We did our own thing, and it was great. Again, it had a huge core audience that loved it, but it just wasn't working in the ratings and the revenue. It just wasn't working. So we, halfway through, they changed it. Some people left, and I had to commercialize it. And it was a very painful thing to do because I was part of the original creation of it. And it was something that I've never really talked about, but I mean, all the music came from my store. I love the original format, and I helped create it. But I saw that, okay, it was a business decision. It was like coming down to, okay, either we're going to stay on the air and when people are going to keep their jobs, and we're going to have to take it apart and reconstruct it. So I tried to do that by taking some of the non-commercial stuff, harder edge stuff, some of the more unfamiliar, because radio is all about being familiar. They have this term, it's all about familiarity, you know, and because the average listening time to radio is 15 minutes, believe it or not.
Wow.
Groove had an extensive, like, I think it was like 6 hours. People with their average listening time.
Well, they
became their lifestyle. I mean, you would drive down Melrose.
I think they had performance enhancement drugs to help them.
Whatever. But I mean, they you would drive down Melrose and you would hear it coming out of people's cars, coming out of all the stores.
Oh my God. I forgot about that part. Melrose.
Yeah. I mean, you would hear it. And in the beach cities, you would hear it just blasting everywhere you went, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, back to changing it, it was a very painful thing to do, but it was, so I thought, okay, I'm going to do now some of what the consultants and people have told me to do.
Because you have to.
I had to do it. And it was horrible to watch and hear, but I knew I was doing, it was a conscious decision, and it was something that was planned, and I did it. In the end, it worked. We had the highest ratings when we went off the air, and overall and within the female demo that they were targeting.
Whatever. EDM, you know, just house music and electronic music draws over hundreds and thousands of people per event. You know, that you can't say that doesn't happen overnight. It, somewhere along the line, there is this commercialization and there has to be a bridge somewhere. And I think that a lot of that stems from, you know, radio stations that help make that popular. What was the coolest thing you got out of being the music director at Groove Radio?
Like, just now that the experiences of meeting so many people, meeting the artists.
Like what? Like which ones? Like what were the experiences?
Just meeting all the DJs. Like recently, you mentioned Carl Cox and some of these famous world DJs, Moby. All these guys came to the station. They mixed. We interviewed them. They were guests on there, and it was just exciting meeting them all in person. And also just the thrill, the fact that you were creating something that people loved so much. There was such a passion for it. I remember the day it went off the air. It was just, it had already gone through its incarnation. But let me talk about that for a minute. When they changed the format midway through, they changed this crappy like CHR R&B format, and that's when they did this stint where they play the Spice Girls loop for like 24 hours, and it was driving people crazy. All you would hear, it went off the air as Groove Radio, and then all you heard for 2 days was like the Spice Girls. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. And then boom, tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Tell me what you want. It's all you heard. It was driving people crazy.
Dude, Vaughn, didn't you post that earlier today on social media about Groove Radio? Because you were coming out, and so we put that on Facebook. Or what did you do?
Well, I was doing my research, so I was looking for anything Groove Radio, right? So I found a YouTube video, and it was like a 20-minute mix of Groove Radio music. So we have this a friendship group thing of just music. So I just posted that on there as like a throwback to you guys, you know, if you guys remember this Groove Radio in itself, you know. It's like so I got so many comments and so many likes on that one. That was pretty cool.
But one of the girls was talking about that. She's like, I remember Spice Girls.
Who couldn't remember? It was driving people crazy.
Yeah, she mentioned that part, that it was just on a loop for like 2 days.
It was on a loop for like 2 days while I was putting all this crap into the music scheduler called the Selector. And they were really...
You guys weren't packing your bags then already? Because it had already been done, right?
Some people left the station at that point, yes. But
you stayed on and you were having to...
and I would have to take it apart and recreate. Because here's the thing that happened. They hired new consultants and things, and I don't know if this story's ever really been told. They hired consultants, and the owner went out of town. He came back to town, and he heard the radio station. After I just put all this music in there, all this like Mariah Carey and all this stuff. I mean, it was the farthest thing from Groove Radio that you could imagine. It wasn't even Groove Radio anymore. And and he heard it and he flipped. He called me at home on a Sunday afternoon. He goes, Steve, meet me at the Beverly Hills Hotel this afternoon. I need to talk to you. And I went up there and he says, can you put this back together? He said, I hate this. And he came down to the station and he fired even more people. And he said, this is just disgusting what you did to my radio station. That's the truth. So he says, let's put it back together. In the meantime, the phone lines collapsed. The fax machines went down. We had such a response. It was unbelievable. We had like 8 phone lines. They all were just jammed.
Wow.
People calling and saying, what are you guys doing? You took off Groove and da-da-da. So we put it all back together, but I toned it down and gave it a new version. And you know, there was somebody that wrote something once that there's this magazine called LA Radio. Don Barrett wrote this thing that it was called Groove Light, and it should have been called Gay Radio. And I just thought, oh, how ridiculous. If the guy knows anything about radio, he'll understand what happened there. But
right.
But you know, and the, like, again, it was the world of radio. So that's what happened. And then when it came back on, I mean, it was just, people were thrilled, even though it wasn't quite what it was before. It still had an edge. It was still something different than any other radio station. So I kept it. I made it more commercial, but kept an edge.
How do you do that? I mean, what's the ear? What's the formula to do that? I mean, are you not allowed? I don't know.
Using some of the research, but mostly just, you know what? I just figured it out. It was some of the music that was just too, that was not going to be accepted by the mainstream, that they didn't understand it. They didn't understand it. Only the core audience that loved that music understood it and thrived on it. So like jungle, drum and bass, some of that stuff, it was great music. Some of the hard house music that we were playing, you know. I still kept all flavors there, but just some of it it was toned down. It was just a matter of deciding which songs to peel off and what to keep on there.
Yeah.
Well, and it had to be more vocal. It had to be less dubby sometimes. And you know, because there were some dubby things we were playing.
Stuff like that. It had to be 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, but I kept the same idea, but just made it kind of where we started with it. But again, some of that music that just I knew was not going to fly with a commercial audience. It wasn't going to grab those big numbers. You know, it wasn't going to make people turn it on in their office buildings and listen to it, you know.
So let me ask you this. There's obviously, it's huge. Electronic music is huge. And you got avenues like Pandora and Spotify where you can just plug your artists and hear tons of that. Will electronic music ever make commercial radio? Will there ever be a commercial radio station just for electronic music?
I don't think so. Maybe, I don't know. Will there ever be? I mean, that's an interesting question because I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe there will be. Yes. I think that Groove was the best attempt at it at that time. But I think that, I think that you hear some of it more now, but they're never, Groove's theory was we wanted to be an all dance station, like completely. Yeah. And that's what our ID, all our IDs said that we were completely dance. We played no ballads. It was just one dance song after another dance song.
Yeah.
And that's where, but see, the theory of radio, oh, you got to have ballads. You got to have slow songs. You can have, you know, there's all these rules. You can't play more than, I mean, it's a very scientific thing. You know, you'd think it is, you can't play more than 3 male vocals in a row. You can't play more than 3 female vocals in a row. You can't have, the tempo's got to change. You got to mix it up.
But no one listens to it that long, do they? I mean, unless you're at work.
Typically they don't. See, that's the thing. In the research world of radio, they listen to it for, the average listening time is 15 minutes. That's why you have certain times of the day that are very important. The drive in the morning, people are in their cars, especially cities like LA. People are in their cars listening to the radio. Drive home, they're in their cars listening to the radio. Yeah. But how long are they doing that? You know?
Yeah.
And that, but where Groove Radio was different, I remember in the research, our average listening time was like 6 hours. It was like,
it was crazy.
It was because people just turned it on and left it on.
Yeah.
Wherever they went, they had it on in their house, they'd go in their car, they'd put it on the car, and they just listened to it all day. It became a lifestyle. Yeah. I remember when it finally went off, you know, the air for good, because, and the reason it went off is because it was Clear Channel, but then it was J-Core. Now that then we were taking too many listeners from Kiss FM and it was dipping into their ratings, and and Ken Roberts did want to sell it, but he wasn't quite ready to sell it yet. He kept waiting for the numbers to go up and for it to become on a certain level of success, and they sold it and killed the format. That was their way of getting rid of us, because they didn't want us taking listeners from them. Welcome to the corporate world.
I have yet to hear another station like Groove Radio. Groove Radio was so unique, so in the time where house music or techno and any kind of electronic or dance music, it was perfect. It fit there. And it has yet to be replicated, in my opinion.
I think it was on today. I think it would have. I think if you put that format, I think to answer kind of your answer your question, I think time has evolved enough that it now, could work to a certain point, yes. I mean, again, it would have to be a commercial version of it, but like there's this song that I love right now called by Audion, and I gave it to you if you want to play it at all. But anyway, it's this DJ Audion mixed, you know, with
Lady Antebellum.
Lady Antebellum. I mean, who would think mixing those? This is what I'm saying earlier about different styles, different artists. It's all merging together now. So yeah. Maybe it's a better time now for something like that. But I mean, I love that song. It's on Astroworks Records, and it's just. And when the first time I heard it, when I hear songs like that, I think, damn, God, that's what I want, you know, yeah. I want to be able to expose people to that because I know that song would be a hit,
yeah.
You know, but will programmers across the country add that record? I think now it has gotten some ads, but, you know.
Well, there is a station. You got my vote for being the DJ and the music director.
Well, thank you very much.
And then we'll do a little podcast at what? 4 in the morning.
4 in the morning. Yeah.
4 to 4:15 in the morning.
We'll do like
the just play music. We'll just play music. We'll bring some DJs in. We'll just do all music.
Okay. So
DJ Fonz.
DJ Fonz. There you go.
There you go.
Can I mention something else?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. I have a. There was a time, you know, I was at Groove Radio. I was the music director there, and I had the record store, and I also before the radio, I launched a second business. It was a record pool. It was a DJ pool. It's called Pacific Coast DJ Association.
Tell the listeners what a record pool is.
It is record pools were to so that all the club DJs and even some radio DJs would become a member. It was a membership, and they would pay you a membership fee every month. And in turn, you would get from the record companies all the remixes of all the songs. Like you would get 12-inch singles and eventually became CDs, but all the remixes of all the songs, all these. So they wouldn't have to get them themselves. And it was easier for the record companies to service the pools rather than servicing all these DJs across the country individually. So, but I started that. I do still have that. And I have, my membership is very low right now, but because they are a dying thing also. I mean, the internet has basically, as great as it is for everybody, I have to say, it has killed stores. That's where all the stores went. Who needed them anymore? Because you can get everything online.
Right.
I saw the record stores die because of that. And it's dying because of record pools. I mean, you go on, there's so many places online. There's a place called SoundCloud. There's a place called Beatport. There's all these websites where you can download and get music. Who needs, nobody needs me to get it for them anymore. So it's a dying thing. Record stores died. A lot of record pools. There's some across the country still there. This pool is now 30, probably, I opened it in 1987. So, but here's my strategy then was this. First, the record store and the record pool. And then the radio station, and they all fed off of each other.
Right.
The reason for the record pool was to bring all the DJs into the store to pick up their records that I would get from the record. And then they'd be in the store and they'd be hearing and seeing all this music and be like, oh shit, I gotta have this, I gotta have that, I gotta have that. What's that? What's this? So then they'd buy music in the store after they picked up their records from the record pool. And so, and then the radio, by getting all the music on the radio, it also drew more people to the store. So it all worked together. And that was my original idea.
Yeah.
And the three tied together.
What do you like now about electronic music? What DJs do you really like? You mentioned the one who did the sample with Lady Antebellum, DJ Aaron. But who do you
Audion? Paul Oakenfold is still one of my favorite DJs. I just love him. His style, the way he remixes songs. I mean, he's an incredible mind, I think. Another one that passed away a year ago, was Peter Rohofer. And I was a huge fan of him. But today you have Afrojack, you have Tiesto. These are like some of my favorites. Tiesto, Dave O'Day does some great work. He remixes a lot of records. And you have Calvin Harris. See, and there again, Calvin Harris, who's now dating Taylor Swift, who is, there's a diverse match. I mean, you know, but he's a brilliant mind. He's got a lot of hits. He's had one hit after another. I mean, so, you know, that's what I say to guys. You know, you can say what you want about these guys, but they're making money. They're making a living and they're loving what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hey, how good like can life be? You know, when you really love what you're doing,
yeah,
you're creating, and you're getting paid big money for it. So there you go. He has.
And
a big,
you're dating Taylor Swift.
And you're dating Taylor Swift. That's, you know.
True. Well, Fonz.
I gotta go listen to so much music now.
Yeah, it's like Steve, you've totally opened even more of another door of music. It's fantastic. It's great. That's one of the coolest things.
I'm so glad like he brought us back to some old stuff that I haven't listened to for years, and then just made me watch a documentary just to do in doing my research. So thank you for opening me up back to that really good old school like house music. That
you're welcome.
You took us through time, man. Yeah. It was a time travel, most definitely.
It's a lot of years, and it's a lot of music, and it's impossible. I mean, I told you we could be here all night talking about all this.
More to come, though, man, and possibly on a radio, on a 24-hour house radio station that maybe you'll be in charge of.
No,
we'll and then see. You'll give us 15 minutes of podcasting.
Of course. We'll see. I don't know what I want to do next. Yes. I have some ideas. Let's just say that right cool. now. I'm working on some new things.
Well, what we think is a great idea is that you came on and spent some time talk about house music. And I think it's incredible because I know everyone, especially all of our listeners, has done some time doing the house music.
Yep.
So it's kind of cool to get it from the source about where it's gone, how it's evolved and things like that. Thank you for coming to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope I shine a light on it all for you a little bit. And I really had fun.
Yes.
Really had fun.
Cool. Most definitely. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. The pilot number 40, Fonz. What
Good
do you think?
Job, Walt.
All right, well, Steve, dude. Thank you very much. Thanks, and Steve. Anything, any last words?
Just, you know, I'm just glad to see everybody just still embraces his music and loves it. And I think that it's just always going to be there, and it's just going to keep reinventing itself. And I don't know. I have a big passion for it. I just love it. And I know a lot of people do. And like I said, I think it's again at a level where I just think that it's everywhere right now. It's everywhere. I mean, it's just, you see it and hear it everywhere. And I just think that it's great that it's gotten to that level. And one thing that I really like to see that I said I'm happy to see is all the fusion, the different styles of music working together.
Yeah.
That's happening a lot right now. So
cool. All righty.
So there you go, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you so much. Time to put some house on, Fonz. Sheesh.
Feels good. Feels good. Feels good.
LA and Orange County's only pure dance team. 103.1
Radio.